Hey listener, it's Chinlin from the future. Just a little mistake that we found when recording. Towards the end, we talk about potential season 2 of Blood of Zeus. I just realized in editing that there is going to be a season 2 of Blood of Zeus. It was announced on December 3rd, 2020. I'm a little embarrassed I didn't catch that when I did my research prior to recording, but hey, I'm correcting it, right? So just a heads up there. Enjoy the show! Hello and welcome to the Bingeables podcast, a podcast for geeky TV junkies where we watch TV shows you just have to binge on. We're your hosts, Chinlin
and Isaac.
If this is your first time tuning in to our podcast, we thank you and we hope you enjoy this episode that we're about to dive into. And if you're a returning listener, please remember to leave us a review on your favorite podcatcher. We are back to talk about the Netflix animated series, Blood of Zeus.
And of course, there will be spoilers.
Was that a Dracula impression?
I mean, maybe. I don't know. It was just a voice.
I was about to say, wrong show. This isn't Castlevania. Although Dracula in Castlevania did not have that voice.
Was there no one that sounded like stereotypical Dracula? I feel like there might have been, but...
Well, his voice wasn't like
that. Oh, no, Dracula's wasn't, but I feel like there was a vampire that did have a voice like that.
Anyways, but maybe I'm wrong. Anyways. Okay, what did you like and what did you not like about Blood of Zeus? Let's start there.
Okay, so what did I like? Let me talk about how I envisioned the show after we saw the first episode. Because the first episode makes it seem like you're going to be following around this guy, Heron, that is sort of secretly the son of Zeus. I don't know if he finds out that he's the son of Zeus personally until the second episode, but... it seems like it might just be sort of an adventure thing, and he is, you know, clearly not a god, so he's gonna have to, you know, fight these demons that seem to be difficult to kill, as something close to a mere mortal. And then we get a few scenes with the actual gods, and when I see that, I'm like, oh man, the actual gods seem like they're gonna have like much cooler storylines. I don't really care about Heron and whatever he gets up to because it's not gonna be as interesting. Because I thought, you know, the gods. My initial reaction was I felt like the gods were going to be sort of these background characters that, you know, showed up a little bit. But then it did actually turn out that we follow the gods a lot. I mean, the whole, you know, climax of the show is, you know, a war between the factions of the pantheon, right? So, and the giants. So it was like what they ended up doing was bringing Heron into the fold instead of having him have his own adventures. That being said, I think the thing that I guess I didn't like it, but it's not a big deal, but I wish there had been a little bit more of Heron and Alexia and Kofi, and I forget the other guy's name, Evios, I think.
Oh yeah, Evios.
I wish there had been more of them doing a little adventuring together. And I think, I mean, based on the way that the narrative was structured, it seems like there may have been room for that, but that if Netflix only ordered 8 episodes, they had to cut from their, like, from everything they wanted to show. And so they ended up, you know, sort of just squeezing these 4 folks together and being like, yep, you're a party, you guys are friends, deal with it. That was really like the thing that I wanted more of, because it just felt like there's this episode, I think it's end of episode 5, where Heron goes and sees the Fates, right? And when he gets out of there, he's like, I have to go. I need to help my friends. And I'm like, you barely know these people.
Yeah, you met them because you were all captured to be human slaves.
And I was like, there were two of them that, you know, you spent a little bit of time rowing a ship with, and the other one, like, she happened to be there when your town was destroyed, but I mean, that's kind of it. Like, I don't know why you feel like you need to go save these folks. The other interesting thing was Zeus's response to that was, no, you're not ready. And so the episode ends, and you kind of get this idea that Heron's just going to take off anyway. But at the beginning of the next episode, it looks like he actually stayed, because he's now all like decked out in like a new bow and quiver, and
he's wearing actual clothes.
Yeah, has actual clothes on and stuff. Yeah, so it seems like Zeus was able to convince him, like, oh yeah, no, I guess I'm not ready. Why don't you go ahead and train me for a day or so, I guess, or however long it took those other folks to go through that mist that, you know, tried to make them turn around, which was a interesting thing. Like, they were told at the very beginning, don't turn around, you'll die.
Don't run, don't turn around.
Just, you know, walk forward. And then some of them somehow still didn't get that message. Like, yeah, just, you know, keep walking forward. That's all you gotta do.
Well, okay, I remember one guy, like, fell, and then he turned around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he fell because...
He ran.
He started running, yeah.
He got scared, he started running, because, you know, that's just your instinct. He started running, he fell, and then he turned around. So he did two things he wasn't supposed to do. So, you know, of course he's gonna die.
Yeah.
But...
Oh, and that was the other thing. So the party that ends up getting into the place where the giant remains are supposed to be stored looks like it has a lot of interesting characters. Like, there's this, like, I don't know, barbarian woman? I don't know how else to describe her. She's just, like, wearing, furs and has a spear. She's never named, as far as I know, and she ends up just getting, like, bisected by the Bident after she, like, slices off the head of a demon. But I feel like they had a lot more characters going on when they made when they were writing the show, and then just had to, like, cut a bunch, I guess, because... they had all these interesting characters. Like, the only sort of filler characters to that party were the Thebeans, because they were just, you know, wearing the same armor and they all looked the same. So whenever they died, it was like, oh no, Ensign Nobody, who cares?
Ensign Nobody.
But I mean, otherwise, I felt like everything was, you know, pretty interesting. I liked that they created this sword. And then the main character, like, never used it.
The sword was made for Heron.
Mm-hmm. And then he never used it.
He used it towards the end, didn't he?
No.
Well, Seraphim steals it.
Seraphim steals it, yep. And then
they never made it to Heron?
Mm-mm. He leaves it back with the automaton that was guarding the Black Cauldron.
Huh.
Like, he uses it to defeat the automaton that's guarding the Black Cauldron, uses Hades' Bident to escape, and left it there, as far as I remember. And I just watched it yesterday.
Hmm. I wasn't paying attention to the weapons.
So, yeah, because the way that Seraphim gets, you know, killed is with Hades' Bident, which the name of which is escaping me, which is a little embarrassing because I've been playing so much Hades that I should know the name of that spear.
Spear of Varatha?
Yeah, Varatha. Yeah, that sounds
You
right.
were the one who told me that is the same spear from the game Hades.
Yeah.
And the show Blood of Zeus.
Yeah.
Yeah. I thought that was cool.
Yeah. Because I didn't know about that spear existing until this show. Right, because we watched this show before we started playing Hades.
Yo, for sure.
And then, you know, it shows up again in the game. And I'm like, oh, well, okay, I guess this is a real thing I should have known about. Interesting. What else? I don't know.
Okay, well, I'll start ranting.
You go ahead.
So I'm going to start with things that I did not like. So I was not into the whole Zeus and Hera thing. Well, first of all, Zeus. The writers made Zeus a good guy, which, you know, story-wise makes sense because Hera is a good guy and his father Zeus needs to be a good guy to guide Hera, right? Well, about his powers?
Sort of a good guy.
Well, he's a flawed good guy, but the point is he's on the side of the good ones. And I don't know, and like he... Like, I don't think of Zeus as a good guy, just in general, because, you know, in many stories of Greek mythology, Zeus is a rapist.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I personally just don't think of Zeus as a good guy, but in the show, he's a good guy. That's just how they made him.
Mm-hmm.
And then Hera, my problem with Hera, like, I understand she is angry at her husband because her husband is always cheating on her. I mean, that's totally understandable. But she gets so angry about Zeus cheating on her with Hera's mother, Electra, that Hera just decides, okay, so Electra is the final straw?
Yeah, it is weird that, like...
Like, oh, okay, so... Like, you knew about this because it was, like, 20 years ago. But now, 20 years later, you find out there was a bastard. Well, no duh, there was a bastard. It's Zeus. He's had, like, 10 or 20.
Well, actually, yeah. So, in the show, they do say something like, this is, like, the seventh time.
Well, in the mythology stories, I'm sure he's had way more than seven.
And so, but, you know, to your point, like,
she decides to make this the time to stand against Zeus and, you know, like, just kind of split up Olympus to people who favor Zeus and people who favor her.
And that sort of makes sense if, you know, if it was just like this running thing and like this was the final straw. But it's not. It doesn't seem like this is the final straw because she keeps going on about, well, you should have thought about that before you slept with that whore. And I'm like, okay, but, you know, what about the other six times? You've decided to let those go, but this one's fine? Like,
and
like, say whores, and all right, okay, now I understand you're upset about every time they cheated on you. But it seems like it's just this one time, and... Like, I don't see how this one time is any worse than the others. Why are you, like, creating a huge, like, deity civil war over this? I get where you're coming from.
Exactly. And, well, second of all, Electra was not a whore. Electra was queen.
And not only that, like, the first few times she had sex with Zeus, she thought it was her husband. Like, she didn't know the difference. Like, she was like, this is very weird. He's very sweet sometimes, like, murderous other times. I don't get it. And then she eventually puts two and two together that they're not the same guy. But, like, the deed has already been done several times at that point. So it's not like she was throwing herself at Zeus on purpose or anything.
Exactly.
Yeah, Hera. But, I mean, maybe that was supposed to be Hera's character, right? Just, like, Hera's not rational, I guess. And she just goes off the deep end because that's Hera. I don't know if that's the characterization that they were going for. Or that's, you know, why the writers think that makes sense. But...
I kind of get it because she's the other god who has to go against Zeus. There is no other god that big. story-wise that they can pit against Zeus.
Or that would have that kind of, would have a grudge, right? Like, you could argue that Ares, god of war, would want war, even if it's war between the gods.
But Ares has no connection to Heron.
Exactly. Which is why they have to, you know, they have to come up with some way for there to be a war between the gods. You know, the other sort of option would have been to, you could have Poseidon go to war against Zeus, because Poseidon is, I don't know, bitter about being in the sea or whatever.
But again, no connection to Heron.
Right. Same thing with Hades, right? Hades doesn't want to be stuck in the underworld forever. But yeah, so if you're going to have, if you have to have it revolve around this bastard son of Zeus, then like the logical person to be upset is Hera. It does seem like a bit of a leap though, because you know Hermes is already also a bastard child of Zeus, and I think Apollo might be too.
So in the show they made Apollo a bastard, but I believe he's in the mythology stories, he's not actually a bastard.
Okay.
But I think they just chose to make two of the gods bastards so that they could, I guess, be empathetic to Heron when he shows up.
To Heron and his story, yeah.
When he shows up to Olympus.
Even though he's like easily 2 feet shorter than the rest of them.
It's so funny how the size proportions are so off.
Yeah, it's like God is like Zeus is easily 9 feet tall, and then Apollo and Hermes are, you know, maybe 7 to 8 feet tall, and then poor old Heron's like, you know, 6 feet or less.
5'10". Yeah.
Average size. I mean, he's muscular, but you know something I picked up on our second watch through, which we just did, in those first couple of episodes, he's shooting arrows at enemies, and you know, I didn't pick it up the first time, but his aim is godly, and I actually made that comment in our second watch through. I was like, man, he's got some godly aim with his bow. And it made all the more sense why he ended up using bow and arrows throughout the rest of the show, even after they made that sword for him. Because of the sword, like, he hadn't apparently, you know, ever really used a sword.
I read this in some article just before we started recording. That was one thing that actually didn't make sense in the show, that someone else pointed out. The sword.
Oh.
Because Heron was already great with a bow and arrow, so it didn't make sense that Zeus was like, oh, hey, here's a sword for you. Because that's not Heron's strength.
That wasn't Heron's strength, but Zeus was like, I can't give you a ranged weapon that's gonna work this way. I can give you a sword. He could have made a spear instead, I suppose, but...
However, the sword did come in handy later, so I know why they put it in there.
And it could have been more of a thing that Zeus was following something he had learned from the Fates earlier. Like, because he's like, I'm going to give you the sword that you need. And he could have been informed by the Fates, like, you will create a sword that is used in, you know, the final war against the giants or whatever. And so Zeus could have been like, all right, well, if we've got these demons and that's probably going to bring about the final war against the giants and I'm supposed to create this sword, I should probably create it and give it to the guy that I want to lead humanity into the new era or whatever. Right. So I could see that, like, I don't think it was a mistake that they included the sword. I think they included the sword on purpose. And the writers really sort of tricked us, because, you know, stereotypically, you create a sword, you give it to the hero. The hero is now overpowered and uses this sword at every turn to solve all of his problems.
But that wasn't the case.
Right. Sort of a little predictably in these days, like, Heron throws the sword away, but you expect that it's going to come back to him at some point and he's going to realize that he needs it. Instead, it doesn't come back to him, and it gets used in a different completely different way than you expect. And it is what, you know, brings, essentially allows Hera to bring the giants back to life, because Seraphim needs it to fight that automaton, because it's what can destroy the armor that Hephaestus created for it. Right? So.
Full circle.
Yeah. No. So I disagree with that person. I think it was useful, and it's just that the creators definitely, you know, subverted our expectations way better than those guys over at Game of Thrones ever could have.
Ugh. How dare you?
What, man? No, those guys are garbage. No, and I doubt anyone listening to this podcast will disagree with me after having watched season 8. They'll be like, yep, we gave him a pass on season 7, and you gave him a pass on season 6.
This isn't about Game of Thrones, but I will say season 8 is, you know, it pales in comparison versus, you know, previous seasons, but you cannot judge the quality of an entire show based on the last shitty season.
I mean, everyone seems to. Like, think about
but
it.
But... everything else about the show is so good. You've got incredibly talented acting. You have an amazing costume design team, an amazing score. I've taken you to that concert twice.
Uh-huh. And, you know, the music is good. But, I mean, think about it. How, like, so many people, like, for the number of people that watched that show so religiously and rewatched it, like, season 8 has put such a bitter taste in their mouth that they won't rewatch the show anymore. They're like,
and
ah,
that's a
I'm
shame
done.
Because you're ignoring all the good stuff about the show.
Which, you know, in my personal opinion, there wasn't a whole lot. In fact, even HBO was actually a little upset with season 1 because they were like, we spent all this money and this show. Like, we were told it was going to be epic, and it seems small. And that was my complaint about season 1. Like, all the epic stuff had been scaled down to, like, 20 people.
But it picked back up because it got super famous after, what, season 2? Because lots and lots of people tuned in for the Red Wedding, okay?
Yeah, I'm just saying.
I mean, I didn't start watching the show until after season 4. So, you know, I binged the first 4 seasons, but... I mean, we got off on a tangent, yeah. But...
I'm just saying that the writers of Blood of Zeus were much more able to subvert expectations with that sword than whatever the writers of Game of Thrones were doing. That's all. That was my point.
What was your comparison? Were you going to compare a sword from Blood of Zeus to a sword in Game of Thrones? Because there's a shit ton of swords.
No. I'm talking about, like, people, like, trying to give you something and then trying to subvert your expectations, like, by going in a different route. And these guys were able to go in a different route and not make it terrible.
Killing off 3 of the main characters in the first 3 seasons of Game of Thrones isn't subverting expectations?
That wasn't their doing. That was George R. R. Martin's writing.
Oh, shit. You're right. Oh, my God.
Yeah. Okay. So, moving on.
No. You don't win this. You don't win this fight.
I'm pretty sure I do.
This isn't.
Pretty sure I do.
You're not winning.
Once D&B were, or D, yeah. Yeah, once they were left up to their own devices, the show, you know, couldn't handle it. I'm sorry. Like,
it's still a good show to watch, okay?
Sure.
I feel like that was a good 5 minutes of arguing about Game of Thrones. Okay, back to Blood of Zeus. We finished up talking about the sword. What else did I not like? I think that was it. I just wasn't a fan of Zeus and Hera. I liked everything else about the show. I really enjoyed watching, rewatching the pilot after, you know, a few months since we first watched the show, because the pilot reminded us of how the giants that the gods fought were captured to begin with.
Yeah.
Because their remains went into the ocean, but it was the souls that went into that cauldron.
Yeah. And yeah, you're right. That was something that neither of us picked up on on our first watch through.
Yeah.
Was that in that retelling that Zeus does in the first episode of what happened to the giants, that they show that Hermes goes around and collects their souls and like puts them into that cauldron or that device.
Yeah, so Hermes is wearing that gold wristlet that helps him capture the souls and puts it into the cauldron.
Yeah.
And that was exactly what Hera needed too. So the second watch through, you appreciate the show even more.
Or at least we did. If you picked up on it the first time, good for you.
Kudos to you.
We did not. No, you. In fact, I think you just reminded me of something that I made a comment on in our first watch through, and you asked me about it in the second, which was sort of these. The animation looked cheap.
So you said that, and I was like, "What?"
So, in the second watch through, I actually recognized what was happening. It was in that first episode where they did a lot of very like cheap animation tricks, and that sort of set the tone for me for the rest of the show. But in the second watch through, I noticed that the rest of the show was actually animated a lot better, except for a few cases where they did a weird slow-mo thing that was really cheap. They were like, "Look, here's four frames." And
I feel like using the adjective cheap is discrediting the crew's hard work. It's just low budget. Maybe they had a low budget.
I assume they did.
I liked the opening title. They did something different with the opening title every episode. I did notice that they took some, I'm going to call it shortcuts, with the slow-mo. So, like, having one scene where you kind of just zoom in on a character's face. So yeah. That's, you explained to me that, okay, that part is not really animation.
It's like, that's not animated at all. They just, you draw one frame.
It's a single frame of a character's face, and you just zoom in on the face.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I understand that, and they probably made those decisions because of low budget reasons.
Right. But what I'm saying is, I think that it was most noticeable just in the first episode. The rest of the time, it does, for the most part, flow. I felt like flow pretty well, and look fairly crisp and well animated. There's a few cases here and there throughout the rest of the show where you're like, oh, they seems like they didn't have the budget to make that look as good as they wanted. I think that was a criticism that I had for our first watch through, and you know, after watching it a second time through, I think it mostly was just in the first episode, so after that it was fine.
Yeah, because when you told me, I was like, the first time when you told me a few months ago, I was like, what are you talking about, cheap animation? I don't see anything cheap about the quality of the show.
Hmm.
But maybe it was just a pilot situation. Maybe they had very little money to make the pilot, and then once they got greenlit for the rest, they had more money to work with.
Yeah, that's possible.
Yeah. But was that something you didn't like, or was that something you're just pointing out as a criticism?
It was something that, like, I thought I didn't like, you know, after the first watch through, but after the second one, like,
you changed your mind.
Yeah, it's, like I said, I feel like it's only sort of a noticeable issue in that first episode, and afterwards it's not so bad.
Okay. We are going to move on to talk about Heron and Seraphim. I think of these two characters as like the tragic brothers tale because, oh my god, Seraphim's story is so tragic. Like, that guy did not have a chance, not since the moment he was born.
Yeah, so I really liked the reveals here.
They made really good reveals in the show.
Well, I felt like they were all predictable, but they were all predictable just a few minutes beforehand. I wasn't super surprised to find out that Heron and Seraphim were brothers, but because, well, I should say this. I wasn't surprised to find out that they were brothers once I found out that that Harren had a brother, right? But before I knew Harren had a brother, like, you know, there was no reason to think that. But as soon as it's like, oh, there was, she had one boy that had brown eyes and one boy that had blue eyes. I'm like, oh, well, then I bet you they might be brothers. But I felt like the reveal was still good, even if it was a little predictable. And then speaking of those sort of reveals, I felt like the way that Hera told Seraphim the story of his life and then the way that Zeus sort of revealed what, like, really happened, I thought that was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was like, and they got to reuse the same animations for a lot of stuff. but because, you know, it's same storyline, but then, you know, just a little bit more of that scene. I thought it was really, like, it was neat to go, oh, she was lying to him, or she was telling him a partial truth. I thought that was really neat, and I liked it. And I liked how they dropped in the three, I forget what they're called, the three...
Fates?
No, not the three fates, the three dream entities.
Oh, Oneiri.
Yeah, the Oneiri.
Oneiri?
Yeah.
Oneiri.
Yeah.
They pronounced it Oneiri, but when you just read the word.
Oh, yeah.
It ends with ROI.
Mm.
I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Because we watch with subtitles.
Yeah.
And I caught that word. But yeah, I liked them incorporating that too.
Yeah. Well, so, you know, I think that you said, I love this scene when Zeus gets killed by Seraphim. And I was like, I don't remember this scene. And you're like, I love it because it's fake. And I'm like, what happened here? And then it was that
One of the three Oneiri controlled dreams.
Yeah.
And well,
they all three of them did, but one of them.
No. One controlled dreams. One was like the one for fear, phobia.
Mm.
And then the other one was Damn, I forgot the third one. One was fear, one was dreams, one was...
Yeah, I don't remember either, but yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It was showing Seraphim a dream, and Zeus, you know, scared it away and was like, okay, so don't believe what Hera is telling you. Here's how it really went down. Like, yes, I had sex with your mom, and yes, you guys are brothers, but I, you know, I was the one that, you know, felt sorry for you, and I tried to keep you alive, even if it was, you know, kind of shitty.
So the second watch through with that dream where Seraphim kills Zeus, I picked up a visual clue that made me, that reinforced the viewer knowing that it's a dream. If you paid attention to the scene again,
mm-hmm.
The edges of the frame are a little blurred out.
Mm, okay.
Yeah. I didn't catch that the first time. But the second time, because, you know, I already know that it's a dream. So then I was paying attention to, like, the sides. I noticed the sides more. And it was a little blurred out.
So I never get those things. So, like you just said, the edges were blurred, right? So in WandaVision, there's this part where they go from this normal, like, 4:3 aspect ratio to a 16:9, maybe even something even more anamorphic. And I didn't notice until, like, I was watching a YouTube video analyzing it, and they pointed it out. I'm like, oh, same thing with Westworld, where they're like, you know, inside...
Inside the forge.
Yeah, inside the forge.
It became the... It had the black...
Yeah, it's higher anamorphic, like, it's more like 21:9 instead of 16:9 or something.
Yeah, and you had the black top and bottom.
Yeah.
I forgot what that's called.
I completely missed all of that. Like, if you mess with the frame, I apparently am just completely immune to that. I'm like, nope, that doesn't look like anything to me. So, yeah, I certainly didn't see the blurred edges. I guess I'm just, like, I'm normally just focused on the screen. Like, I don't know. My brain makes the closure happen and go, yep, this is the thing that you care about. I don't really care. Don't pay attention to the black parts. They don't matter.
I liked that dream sequence a lot. I don't know why. It was just so perfectly done. Zeus is just unguarded, taking a bath, and then, bam, Seraphim comes in. Hera, like, puts stone on one of his hands so he can't move, and then chop.
Yeah. Yep.
It was such a good kill. I don't know. I just liked it.
And then, of course, you know, not real.
Not real. But it did help foreshadow Zeus's death.
Yeah. So, speaking of Zeus's death, so at the end of the show, Zeus is dead, right? But Hera sort of might have his powers, like the ability to control lightning?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, it would make sense.
It seems like that's how he killed Seraphim in the end, was that, like, he grabbed him and, like, hit him with the lightning, and that's what actually ended up finally killing Seraphim. But to that point, you know, Heron had not shown that he had any control over lightning, so I don't know. That reminds me, that is something I really liked about the show, was the giants. I liked that, like, you're like, you know, when you first see them fighting, you're like, I don't understand, why are these giants so difficult? Like, it seems like you can cause them harm and whatever. It seems like it should be very easy, barely an inconvenience to destroy them. But you see that they've got essentially the regeneration of Wolverine. Like, they can just be like, oh, I didn't have an arm? That's fine. I'll grow it back in a few minutes. Don't you worry about that. So that makes it understandable why the gods have trouble, you know, vanquishing them, because, yeah, they can cause damage, but they can't cause damage fast enough to, like, kill the giant. The giant just when Zeus died, he essentially exploded and took off, you know, the top quarter of that one giant's body and mangled his face and everything. And then a few minutes later, that giant's got, you know, at least his skeleton and a few muscles on that arm back. And his face is still pretty messed up, but, you know, he's still going. So, you know, he's fine. So I liked that about the giants, that they were, and that the giants weren't just completely mindless. Like, they understood that they could betray Hera and be like, so once we've got the cauldron, you have no more power over us, so fuck you.
Yeah, I actually did like them betraying her. But I want to go back to Heron and Seraphim really quick.
Sure.
I liked the reveal of them being brothers. And I just want to say one more time, like, the writers did a really good job creating Seraphim's character, because he's the tragic brother. He had literally no chance of a good life. As soon as he was born and his mother killed his father
to protect her baby.
To
right.
protect.
Yeah. It's not in self-defense, but in defense of an innocent child.
Yes. As soon as that happened, you know, their uncle, Acrisius, was, you know, greedy and wanted the throne for himself. So he was like, okay, I'm going to throw this baby into an ocean. Goddamn terrible.
Yeah.
And then even though Seraphim was rescued by Electra's midwife or something.
Handmaid, whatever.
Handmaid, midwife. Even though he was saved by someone who cared for him and loved him, like, that wasn't going to last forever. He had to see his mom, his adoptive mom, die horribly. He was, one of his eyes was scarred.
Yeah.
And then because his eye was scarred, he grew up having a terrible adolescence because he was basically a freak.
Yeah.
And then because of that, like, you know, he's isolated, he doesn't have any friends, like, he just never had a chance to have a good life.
Yeah. And you can certainly empathize with, like,
like, I don't blame him for killing the guy who killed his adopted mom. and then running away and ending up finding the giant remains and then turning into a demon because the giant remains had influence over him as soon as he touched their skin.
Right.
So he couldn't do anything about the touching the demon remains.
And yeah, and so at that point you're like you can certainly see where he's coming from, and then even in the end where he's like, look, I'm like, where he's asking Heron to join his side, he's like, look, I'm tired of the gods like fucking with our lives. Like, they fucked me so bad in my life that I would rather them no longer exist, and that's what I'm working towards. And like, you can understand that sentiment, right? Like, yeah. Mm-hmm. His whole life has been messed up because Zeus saw a pretty woman and then everything went downhill from there.
And that kind of goes with the whole destiny versus, not destiny, fate versus free will thing. That's always prevalent in mythology, right? Like, Seraphim didn't have much free will.
Well, he had free will, right? It's just that
all the scenarios that he ended up with was because of the gods budging in.
Right.
So, like, he didn't really have that much free will.
Well, it's not that he couldn't make choices. It was just that, like, every time, everywhere he turned, his best choice, like, ended up still being a shitty one, right? Like, my best option here is to... Yeah, he wasn't given a whole lot of options, but he made the choice to go and and kill the man that killed his adoptive mom. He didn't have to do that, but you understand why he would want to do that.
Mm-hmm.
He had choices. It's just that they were, you know. His option was to either, you know, seek vengeance or not, and he chose to seek vengeance, and, you know, that, you know, leads you on a path that's different from if you choose not to.
I guess the thing I'm trying to communicate is fate keeps getting in his way. Like, he's as soon as Hera shows up, he's being used. Yeah. For the rest of the season.
Yeah.
And even in the afterlife, he's being used by Hades.
So that's a good question. They leave it open, but I'm not sure that he takes Hades'
offer.
Because he's like, I can keep you from... It looks like he's going to essentially the version of hell of the underworld, which according to the game, Hades is Asphodel. But, you know... Who knows? Because I didn't really look up any of this Greek mythology. I guess I could have. For Hades to keep him away, Hades is like, you only have to do one thing, kneel. And for Seraphim, that's like the thing that Hera was making him do over and over again against his will. And... he doesn't want to be used by the gods anymore. And here's another god that's like, I can help you, but only if you become my subject. And so it's very possible that that cry is a cry of anguish because he's like, I don't want to go do that other thing, but I also don't want to serve Hades. So, you know, he's stuck between a rock and a hard place, and he may end up just going, you know what, fuck it, I'll go to Asphodel and endure an eternity of torture instead of, you know, living under the boot of Hades. I don't know, but...
But even in afterlife, he was going to be at the hands of another god.
Yeah.
Yeah. And even though Zeus had good intentions, like... With Seraphim's childhood?
Yeah, like he's...
Like Zeus still... Even though Zeus was helping him, Zeus was still butting into his life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So Seraphim just... His whole life was being played at the hands of gods.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then lastly, I want to discuss very briefly theories about season 2, if there is going to be a season 2. I just want to say, it ends, season one ends on a pretty good note for Heron and his friends, because he's back in Olympus. Obviously, Zeus is gone, so it kind of makes sense for Heron to, like, try to be a leader and, like, reassure the people of the gods of Olympus, hey, everything's going to be okay. Like, I can see them, I can see the writers kind of doing that for Heron. And then the other thing I was going to say is, Hera is still alive.
So Hera, yeah.
Hera is still alive, so it totally makes sense for her to come back and try to reclaim Olympus.
So I don't think that Heron would ever be accepted in a position of leadership on Mount Olympus.
Oh my god, you're right.
I think all the other gods would be like, who are you? You're barely a demigod. Get the fuck out of here.
But he did help them win the war.
Sure. But...
Well, you're right. You're right. They won't accept him.
So I think, I mean, one, I don't think they'll make any more of this show. Because I think it wraps up pretty well. But if they did, I think that, like, what you would, like, what is set up is, again, for just another, like, civil war between the gods. Because there will be a power struggle over who rules Mount Olympus, and it's certainly not Heron. And, you know, the obvious choice is Hera, but she's... and it's hard to tell whether or not that she kind of had a change of heart after she sees Zeus killed, because I think she might have. So I think she's sort of an obvious, like, yeah, she wants to rule Olympus, but, you know, Poseidon and Ares probably also feel like they could, you know, handle that mantle. It's, yeah, I could see, like, a war between the gods, but nothing like what we had here where there was some, you know, Cinderella story or a David and Goliath where there's a little guy that ends up helping defeat a big guy. Nothing like that. So that's why I don't think there would be a season two.
Okay. I mean, I like that too. If they didn't have a season two, I'd be fine with that. I wouldn't be surprised if there was going to be a season two, though.
Yeah, the only reason I don't think there would be is just because of how neatly things wrapped up in the end. Or at least the way I feel they were neatly wrapped up. It didn't seem like there was a real cliffhanger except for, you know, what's the fate of Seraphim?
And Hera leaving.
Yeah, but we'll see.
Yeah, okay. Well, just wanted to do that part. But yeah, that is it for our discussion on Blood of Zeus. Until next time, bye.
Thanks for listening to the Bingeables podcast.
Leave a review on Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you enjoy listening to our podcast, please consider giving us your support on Patreon for as little as $1 a month. Just visit us on patreon.com/bingeablespod. That's patreon.com/bingeablespod.
You can connect with us on Twitter at BingeablesPod, or you can email us at BingeablesPod@gmail.com.
Until next time. And the music you're listening to is Shaving Mirror by Kevin MacLeod.